Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Hey, 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 how y'all doing? Today on the Core Queen Chat, we are going to be diving into childhood trauma, church trauma, and the journey to healing from it all. And I couldn't even imagine doing this topic, having this episode without the most powerful voice that I know from where I'm from, my sister from another mister, Miss Ramona Gaines. Y'all, I'm going to introduce her before I bring her on the show, because she's so amazing, she's so powerful, she's so just exceptional. So I just want y'all to know how great she is before I bring her on. Ramona is a visionary entrepreneur, author, and healing advocate. She's the founder of Stillwaters Cafe and Stillwaters Ministry, which have served as sacred spaces for faith, music, and emotional recovery for over two decades. Her journey through grief, spiritual conflict, and personal transformation has birthed a powerful body of work, including the Movement is Medicine series, the Parent Kids Network, and the Uplifting Nanny and Me book series. Ramona is not just speaking about healing. She's lived it, taught it, and continues to embody it through faith, family, and purpose. Please help me welcome the amazing, the powerful, the incomparable Ramona Gaines to the show. Fred, take her down. I told you she wasn't ready. Y'all wait for a second. Ramona trying to get her technical difficulties together. And my engineer is going to put her up on the screen. And he can see that she ain't ready. Oh, my goodness. Lord have mercy. Y'all, welcome Ramona to the show. Welcome, Ramona. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Is she ready? I think she ready. She look like she ready.
See me? Yeah. Am I good?
Yeah. She's ready. Yep. You're looking beautiful.
Thank you.
Probably
you
missed your intro. Did you hear the intro?
Yes, I heard. I appreciate you.
I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm happy to be here with family.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't even know. Ramona saved me from a lot of stuff.
we might have been saving each other.
No, that's right.
How about that?
Listen. So, can you share a bit about your upbringing and how like trauma may have first showed up in your life? Where you're from? All that good stuff.
Wow. Yeah. So I am from West Philadelphia. Philadelphia, born and raised. That's what everybody's gonna say.
On the playground is where I spent most of my day. No, I'm joking.
Except for I couldn't go outside. But. Wow, it's so intricate. It's such an intricate journey. I was raised in a single parent household. Mm-hmm. However, I didn't start off in my parents' household. I started off with my grandparents. Well, my grandmother at the time, she was, Dee Dee, you're going to get the stuff. Okay. So, my grandmother was married at first, and then her husband died. And so when her husband died, we moved to California for a little while. So I was with her, and I was with my family in California. I was in Compton. And so all I know is, and I just realized this last year, right? One minute I looked through the family album, and I had all these pictures in California. And then when I was about 4 or 5, I looked at the pictures, and I was back in Philadelphia, and I was in daycare. So that told me a lot. No one ever had a conversation with me about it or anything. To this day, I've just announced and acknowledged that, you know, pictures don't lie. And we're good at secrets in the Black family. So it's one of those things that make you go, so I noticed for the rest of my journey, my educational pieces were handled by my mother, but my nurturing and everything else came from my grandmother. And then she got remarried. My grandpa, that I still call Mr. Gibson, or y'all call him Mr. Gippy. But they were my parents in every sense of the way. And so much so, for a long time, I didn't know anything was missing or that the picture was different from what it should have been, because they provided what I needed. So when people say my father wasn't there or whatever, I didn't miss that as a child. My grandfather just stepped in. I had my great-grandfather who was there with us. He lived with us for a little while with my mom in Philadelphia until he got sick and he passed. So there were men that were just good men, and they were there, and they covered me as best as they could. So it's a little weird, but it's, I always say this, God does transplants. And sometimes we might not like the way that we've been transplanted, but I just believe that everything is orchestrated for our good. And there's a reason, there's a purpose, and there's a plan. And I definitely know there was a purpose and a plan for me to end up in Bristol, Pennsylvania, to be saved from a lot of things that I could have encountered as a city child that I didn't encounter and I didn't see. And funny story is, before my mother's father died, him and my grandmother were going to buy a house by Lafayette School. He passed, and my grandmother still ended up in Bristol. Ended up in Winter Village.
Wow, that's crazy. So, like, did you ever, like, when did you realize, or did you ever realize that, like, your upbringing wasn't normal?
I think when I got into my teens, things kind of got rough because I got a phone call, and it was probably like eighth grade, right? I got a phone call. It was Christmas break. We were in Bristol, and you got to go home. Your grandfather died. What grandfather? And my grandmother's like, your grandfather, your father's father died. You got to go home. And I was like, I don't even know the man. Why do I have to go home? Why are you interrupting my break? And why do I have to go home? And, you know, they were raised, you have to do the right thing. That was very detrimental to me. I came home. I went to the funeral. And the man that was in the casket was the man that I saw every morning when I was walking to school. And I did not know that that was my grandfather.
That's heavy. This was
Thursday and Friday. You know, Thursday was the funeral. Friday was the burial. And this is what hit me hard as a young lady, because I was brilliant. I was very astute. I was very articulate, very top of the class, high achiever, played basketball. I was so happy. You hear me, Dick? I was so happy. But I sat in a room with my mother and all his family that I didn't know, and some of them were very kind and everything, but I sat in a room with the man that they said that was my father, and he didn't speak or say hello to me for 2 days. He didn't acknowledge my presence.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
At 13 years old.
Wow. That's tough. Did your mom say anything in that moment, or no?
Nothing. Now, so I had encountered this gentleman. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, like, was this your first time meeting him, or you had already, like, you knew him?
I had encountered him maybe twice, maybe three times. But I remember the one time they tell you somebody's your aunt. You know, we black, right? Everybody your aunt, everybody your cousin.
Right.
But we were at the funeral when I was 9. At this other funeral, and the gentleman came up to me, tapped my hand, and I snatched it back. Stranger danger, I don't know you. So I went in the house, and my mom said, did you see your father? And I was like, what? And so she's like, did you see your father? And I was like, now I have words. Like, what's osmosis? Like, come on, how was I to know? So she takes me back outside, and the man that touched my hand wasn't him. And I was like, what am I supposed to do with this at 9? So it was just riddled with,
Wow. Now, since the last time you saw, was the last time you saw him at your grandfather's funeral?
No. Recently, 20, like after Robert passed, like 2017, 2018, I've tried to kind of like make some kind of peace with that. Our parents get into some stuff that, we end up walking in the cloud of shadows and secrets. So there have always been whisperings and murmurings of somebody else could be. And I've had to kind of deviate from the cloud of that. And, you know, people still saying DNA is required, and but one paid child support and one says something else. And it is something that almost tried to strangle me at one point. But I have had to just stand in my truth. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. No one wants to tell the truth. But I'm not a mistake, and I'm here for a purpose.
Yeah, I know that's right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I like that. That's a good mindset to have. I like that. So do you... How do you think, like, your environment, like, even with your family, even outside of your mom, your family, community, how did they respond, or lack of response, to your, like, emotional and spiritual struggles that you had?
They love me, both of them, right? Mm-hmm. And they love Lana. And that's how I take it.
Okay.
I don't get to ask God, why did you put me in the middle of this? I don't know how to ask that at this point. I mean, I could say, hey, and at some point I'm sure I did. I haven't gotten an answer. So I've just chosen to just be like, I'm here for a reason. And one might call it a fork. I don't know what to call it. But when I'm needed, when I'm called upon, I respond, I show up as my authentic self. And I just keep being Ramona. That's the best that I know to be, and just and be honest and transparent with my own daughter about my journey, because it doesn't just affect me, it affects her as well. You know what I mean? And it's so much beyond time or child support or anything like this. Health concerns and all of those questions. And you know, I love that people can say, you know, once we get saved, we have the blood of Jesus and we have his DNA. But no, we need to know some other things too, especially, you know, with this, I'm just being honest, when my mother's last bout with cancer, we had to do like genetic testing to see whether or not it ran in the family. And it was a good thing that I knew what I knew, but then I had to, you know, make sure that me and my sister were good. You know, what do we need to do? Is that something? So that doesn't bode well when we keep secrets like that for a myriad of reasons. It's just not good. It's not good at all.
Yeah.
And it can mess with our identity. And I struggle with seeing God as a father because I didn't know what to do with that. And there have been times where I was like, how do you be a daughter if you've never walked in that role? And how do you be soft? And how do you go to him as Abba? With, like, I've had to sort and go through all of that on my journey. So when you hear me say daddy or father, like, it's genuinely now from a place that I understand I have relationship. He cares for me. And he is a good father. But I had to wrestle through some things to get to that place where Jesus as Lord, right? And see him as my elder brother. But that father thing, I was struggling with. I really struggled.
Right. I think, is that my signal or hers, Brett? It was delayed. So we're going to move into the church trauma realm. Because I think, from my experience, I think those two go hand in hand, childhood and church trauma. So how did the church, growing up, how did the church influence your understanding of yourself and your self-worth?
Church or black church?
Whatever church you was going to growing up.
Okay, well, here we go. I went to two churches at one time, right? Mm-hmm. So I went to Baptist church, and I was also Catholic, too. Mm. But it was a black Catholic church, too. Okay. So, yeah. But I got saved when I was 7 at the Baptist church. Mm-hmm. And I was very active at a young age. I was probably about 3 or 4 when they started me in the choir, where I had to stand in the chair to sing because I was too short. And first song we learned was Jacob's Ladder. We were climbing Jacob's Ladder. I was on the usher board. And I loved it. We had a youth in action youth group, and I was really, really active. And like, I was the kid that would cry when I didn't get the choir rehearsal because I loved it so much. Like, Going Up Yonder was like that new hit, and it was the jam. And I was in. Like, I fell in love with Jesus at a young age. I was in. I was very cognizant when I went up front to get saved of what was going on. Then I ended up in Catholic school because the city of Philadelphia went on strike, school district. My mom was like, I don't have money for a babysitter. I'm sending her to Catholic school. So I ended up in Catholic school in 2nd grade. And I embraced that too. And then I still went to the Baptist church. And I think I was just looking for God. I wasn't looking for all the other stuff because it was so many other things that were going on in my little life that I needed help with. And if you're going to, I was the kind of kid, if you're going to tell me prayer is going to fix things and change things, then I'm looking for it. I'm looking for God to hear me. I'm looking for God to answer. And so that's how the Catholic Church really lost me, because they had us telling them Hail Marys and those 200 Our Fathers, and we was out there in the sun. And, you know, it wasn't, and it got so bad, Dee Dee, I would pray loud, real loud, because I felt like God wasn't hearing me. Like, you know? And so, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go back over here to my grandma's church because I see things happening over here. Mm-hmm. I came back fully to the Baptist church when I was about 15. But something traumatic happened to spearhead that. But I was on my way about 13 anyway when that other experience happened. But for me, it affirmed who I was. Like, the Baptist church taught us how to speak in front of people. It taught us not to be afraid. It, you know, instilled in us good posture, diction, articulation, and all of that. Things that we didn't have to pay for, that some people are paying for their children. We got there when you were with the right people. Mm-hmm. Fortunately for me, as a child, you know my grandma, Ella, she just did not play about me. And... yeah, wasn't no games going down. Right. And she was with me, or my grandpa was with me. And it just was a discipline that I got growing up in it that I would be forever grateful for.
Absolutely.
However, I recognize that that is not everybody's experience.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
You know, I happening.
We definitely learned a lot.
Yes.
A lot. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But what did end up happening that devastated me was once I became pregnant and I was not married, although I was an adult. And I have to acknowledge that it was on the heels of my grandmother dying. So I was already in a sorted place. Mm-hmm. So she passed September 14th, 1995. They found Lana on an x-ray November 10th, 1995. And at that point, I was 7 months. So it was like turning a channel on a television. Like, I knew I was grieving. I knew I was mourning. My mother was gone. But I had to turn a channel because another life was getting ready to come. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what life was going to look like already without my grandmother. But now I'm going to be someone's mother. And I never didn't want to do that, especially as an unwed mother, especially at that age, because I was so broken. I didn't feel like motherhood was something that I should choose because I knew the depth of brokenness I came from in my own home. I knew my own mother was broken. So I did not want to pass that on to my daughter, but here it is. You gotta hurry up and get this together. And then I wasn't supported from the very place that I loved. And I had to get through that. So I didn't stay long after I had her. And I knew that God was preparing me to leave. Now, I didn't leave prematurely. I didn't leave angry. I waited for God to direct and order my steps for the next place to go, but that messed with my psyche and my self-esteem and my self-worth for a while. And I think the thing that still angered me as well is the gentlemen are not treated the same as the women, and you're sitting in the same church.
So let's talk about it, because a lot of times in the Black church, for people who are watching and don't know or haven't experienced it, young girls are really ostracized and they are held to a different standard when they get pregnant and they're not married. the men, they don't say much of anything to them at all. Like, they just continue to go on. We may not be able to sing in the choir anymore, do whatever auxiliaries we're on anymore. And we are treated as if we're like a plague. Like, we have done the utmost thing that could ever happen in the church, and now we've embarrassed everybody. And we're kind of like just cast aside. And nobody is talking about, number one, how already traumatic it is to be pregnant as a teenager. Number two, most of the time, not even really having a support system as a teenager, especially when you get pregnant. Number three, we're already in survival mode as is in this type of like disassembled community where we don't really have the strong foundation and family structure that we should have. And then number four, the only place that we feel like we can go to is the church, because that's what we've been forced to go to. That's been our refuge this whole time. And then the one time we actually need some support and a safe place to land, they push us out and tell us, nope, you messed up. We don't want you no more. You're not perfect enough. We won't talk about that enough and how traumatizing that can be.
Yeah.
Just sweep it under the carpet and keep it moving. Figure it out.
And we've lost a lot of people because of that. Mm-hmm. I often even wonder if that's the reason my own mother has never went back to church. And there's still, I say, a ring in a robe if you come back, right? Because just like the prodigal son was able to come back home and his brother may have not liked it, there still was a place for him. And he had a right to come back home. And we have a right to come back home. But I love what Christian said the other week. Every home may not be ours, and every brother or sister might not be our brother and our sister. And we got to find our place.
Yep.
And once we find our place, we get rooted and grounded, and we can grow and become who we're supposed to become. Because a lot of times when young people are promiscuous, we don't need to ask why it happened, or, well, maybe not how, but why. You know, how did you get out there? Because I recognize when I look back on my life, remember we used to do the plays and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was writing then, and I was telling on myself. I was dealing with the pressures of that.
Mm-hmm.
People were not paying attention. It's not easy, especially when, you know, you've been touched as a child, or, you know, by the time I started writing plays, I had dealt with molestation. I dealt with being abducted and sexually assaulted at 15. That's what really drove me back into the arms of God, because I knew if he didn't heal me, if he didn't help me, I was going to lose my mind. I was clear on that, because the people around me were not equipped to handle what I was going through. They were not equipped to help me heal or walk through it. And I knew Jesus to be that real, that he could help me. That I knew. But now something has been opened in me, and we don't want to talk about, we talk about a generational curses. Well, now this foreign person touched me, and now I'm dealing with a spirit of perversion, and I'm wanting, and I have an appetite for something that I never would have wanted. I was innocent. I wanted to play. I wanted to ride my bike. I wanted to, you know, do whatever. Me and my friend Stacey used to sit on the rock and just giggle and catch lightning bugs. I wanted that. I didn't want to be grown and carrying on in the streets and care, but something evil happened to me. But nobody ever had a conversation with me. Mm-hmm. When I tried to have those conversations, it was like, don't talk about it. Just keep going. Well, it's going to manifest in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
In your life, it's going to manifest if you don't address it. And I think that's the thing that,
The signal is really bad.
Yeah, we're having a storm.
Yeah, that signal is terrible. Yeah.
It is.
Hold on, let me. You want Wi-Fi or a cell phone?
Yes. I'm on my Wi-Fi.
Are you close to the Wi-Fi router? Or are you far from
it? Yeah. Well, okay. I'm not on the router.
No, are you close to the router in your house? The Wi-Fi router in your house?
I can get close. Do you want to?
Yeah, let me just read some of the comments while she get it up. Can you go to the first? Go back up to Nathan Turner. Yeah, Nathan Turner Senior says, "Great word, my sister." Proverbs 22:6. Rise up. I think it's supposed to say, "Raise up a child in the way they should, and they will not depart from it." Our training phase early in our childhood helped us navigate our life journey. Keep on keeping on, Dee Dee Leggett. Love you and proud of you. Thank you, Chief. Go to BJ Reed, the second one. What is that one? Up. Yeah. Black churches are super conservative. Woo, child, you ain't lying. Can't wear no makeup in the choir stand, no earrings, no nothing. Go to the next one, BJ said. BJ Reed, there's not an honest conversation of sex and relationships in the church. And that's a problem because even outside, even in the black home, if we're not getting it at home and we at church all the time, where are we getting it from? Our friends and people that we telling each other the wrong stuff. So, yeah, the church is like taboo to even say the word sex, even speak about sex. It's crazy. Go to the next one, BJ. BJ said that those things are swept under the rug and secular help is sometimes shunned. Yeah. The church don't want no else outside influence. They don't want to bring professionals in or even seek the professionals that might even be in the church already that do these types of things to even bring in, to have these conversations with kids and teenagers in a tone that they can understand or that makes them comfortable. Everything is swept under the rug. And if it's not in the Bible, we ain't talking about it. What did Kimberly Johnson say? That scenario plays out like the woman brought to Jesus caught adultery. But the lesson of the story is often forgotten. It still doesn't excuse the lack of accountability by the male counterparts. Yeah, I just feel like when it comes to the church, it's just like women have such a heavy burden put on them for everything. Back in the day, it was very rare that you even saw or heard of a woman leading the church or being a pastor in the pulpit. Like, there's just so many things we are not allowed to do. Or we have to follow these stringent instructions, but men can pretty much carry on however they want to carry on. What did Danica Dove say? Our women's therapy group had a conversation just like this last night. I got to tune in to y'all, Danica. I see y'all out there doing good things, and these conversations need to be had because there's a huge gap that's happening from my generation to where we went to church and there was no, like, it wasn't no option. We had to go to church. We didn't have an option. And then my kids, like, I don't make them go to church because I'm like, I ain't have that good of an experience. I learned a lot of good stuff, but I feel like there was a lot of things that happened to me that shouldn't have happened where I was supposed to be protecting and I wasn't. So I don't force my kids, but my children have an amazing relationship with God. I'm talking about my 15-year-old son. I wake him up in the morning. He don't even speak to me. He start praying as soon as he get up. He got his Bible sitting right there on his bed. And he read his Bible every day. He didn't learn that from church. So, you know, the relationship is more important to me than the whole traditional aspect of being in church. What did Danica say? Unlearning and relearning so we can't teach our kids. We can teach our kids better. Exactly. Because there are different ways to do things and we don't have to be stuck in some stringent, overly conservative, I'm going to say cult-like teaching of how the structure of the church is. It doesn't have to be that way. And that's why a lot of the churches are losing young people because they're not willing to change some things. I'm not saying you got to go away from the things that make the church because right. That's what brings people to you. That's that comfort that they want to feel. But some stuff needs to be changed because it wasn't right to begin with.
Right. I think the thing that I want to highlight because I want to be very careful that, you know, it's not received that we're bashing the black church. And I know that that's not what this is for. Mm-hmm. But we have to be open to resources. And we have to be open to the needs that our people have. And that's where it comes in that we have to be sensitive to the Holy Ghost. And I don't believe that every pastor has to carry the burden alone for their people. I believe that they have mental health things that need to be attended to as well. And they're not skilled in everything that the people come with. Oof. They do come with schizophrenia. They do come with bipolar. They do come with other mental illness. They deal with children that are autistic. They're on the spectrum. They're dealing with people that have diseases, like terminal diseases, cancer. And that's why we see so many men and women of God dealing with burnout as well, because they don't have things in place for them. They don't have things in place for their family or their children. There's not balance. And going away are the days of Superman or Superwoman. We know that Jesus is the ultimate. Yep. But if he has doctors here, if he has not just physical doctors, but if he has mental health providers and people that are skilled and trained, incorporate them into your staff, bring them in, provide that for your families so that they can get what you need. And then you as the leader can deal with the spiritual side that you're called to and give them that word. That's what we have to do. And that's what we're called to build people up as kingdom citizens so that they can go about their daily lives. I should not just be care about or concerned about your spiritual well-being, because the Bible says that I would that you would prosper in all areas. So that's mental, that's physical, that's emotional, and that's spiritual.
Yep.
God cares about all of those aspects of us, or he wouldn't speak about them in the Bible. And healing is one of them that is prominently spoken about multiple times. Now, we might not still have the same illnesses that they dealt with, but Jesus still came to heal, because the Bible says that healing is the children's bread. Well, if I'm a child of God, then my healing is my inheritance, and I have a right to it. Whatever it is that I need healing in.
That part. I'm so glad you said that, because I think, first of all, I'll never bash the church. I will only speak on my experiences.
Right.
So whatever anybody else experiences, please don't take mine as facts, because that's just my experiences.
Our experiences.
I think that there was a disconnect, and there still is for the most part. I think some churches are getting it right. But I think there's a disconnect where they back in the day, they just weren't educated enough to know that they could incorporate these other things, because it was looked at as worldly, and I don't have faith. And I'm like, well, God created these people for a reason, so that you could use them. So why wouldn't you use them? But people don't know. They don't know what they don't know. And I don't think they realize how much harm they did. And I'll give an example, and I don't want anybody to be offended by this, but my mother was addicted to drugs, and she never went to rehab. She went to church. And I, to this day, don't believe that they were skilled enough to fix what she needed to fix, address what she needed to address. I think what they did was put a Band-Aid on, and it's been a very long-standing Band-Aid that she's had on this, and there are issues that she still hasn't dealt with to this day, because she feels like she got Jesus and she don't need nothing else. But her, like, just trying to have conversations with her, anything is really hard, because she's hiding behind the guise of the church. And I'm like, no, y'all need to call out that she need some other intervention here. But it's not going to happen, because she got Jesus. So it's never going to change, because that's just what the church is going to continue to feed her.
I think that we have to look back historically, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm a 70s baby. We were just coming out of a great civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. A lot of things were just opening up to us educationally and things like that. A lot of our people, whether they be honest or not, they couldn't read.
That part.
Or so a lot of preachers, they memorized the Bible. And so while they were very articulate in their vernacular and their verbiage, and they could deliver a fiery sermon. They didn't have much after that because they couldn't read something else. And in the Black church, if you're nobody and nowhere else, you're somebody there, right? Outside of there at that time, you know, you were looked at a certain way, but nobody was ever going to question you if you didn't bring anything different in, or it was seen as the devil. And everything is not the devil. Information is not the devil. And we have to be careful that, you know, we don't label those among us that go out and do something different as the devil. And what I had to tell my own community is, because the Black community will do you also. They call me the white girl from the hood because I speak complete articulate sentences. But somebody has to speak the language that not only the village speaks, but you got to speak another language outside the village so you can get to the village what they need. They don't understand our language if I go to the table and make requests or try to negotiate for us. And I'm speaking the language that we speaking in the village. They're not from the village.
Right. Yeah.
And we have to be okay with that. So elitism, colorism, racism within our own culture, in the church, and in our own community plays a part in that as well. And we could talk about that all day, but I just wanted to bring that out there. Oftentimes we're afraid of what we don't know.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree. Frey, can you put BJ's comment up, the first one at the top? BJ said, my son's relationship with God is personal. It's his own. I can suggest and speak to certain things, but he has to develop his relationship. That's true. Go to his next one. We have to understand that using those avenues doesn't mean we're leaning upon our own understanding. Come on, BJ. Come on with the word. Come on, BJ. Faith without works is dead. Come on. If we ask for help in different forms, we should be using it. Mm-hmm. You talk that. Next one. So many have been walking around with their eyes wide shut. Oh, my goodness. Listen, let me shut. I was about to say something. Next, go to Danica's comment. No, I was going to say, if my mom would have shouted, one more Sunday. One more Sunday, Ramona. I was like, when is the healing coming? This is embarrassing. I'm tired. I didn't know how hurt and broken she was, though.
Yes. And that was the thing that was saving her from flipping over to the other side.
Yeah.
That was the discipline. That was the thing she needed to sustain her.
And I'm at the church like this in the pew.
Well, we all were. You know, we wasn't cheering our people when they got happy, because I mean, my grandma would get the Holy Ghost. She would tear up the front, and then she's supposed to go in the kitchen to cook breakfast, and she in there, the pots is flying, and we waiting on grits and candles, and they like, Sister Gibson, and then she happy.
Lord, listen, oh my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah, we definitely, oh Lord, some times was had up in that church. Oh my.
Yes, heavens.
Let me get to, I got so many questions. Let me get to another question. This one. Okay. So in what way did trauma shape your adult relationships and how you navigate them?
Which ones? Because,
Well, let's talk about how your trauma has, how did you navigate romantic relationships?
Well, I gave the brothers a hard time. Mm. Yeah. And I didn't do the all men are dogs thing. I didn't do that. But then one day I just woke up, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think I was 33, I took a job with the Department of Recreation, and I started teaching after school kids. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened. The gentleman that abducted and raped me, his son worked there, and he had the same name, and I hadn't talked to anybody about that
Oh my God.
Since I was a teenager. And I blacked out. Like, my whole life just unraveled.
Oh, my God.
And so I went back to therapy. But then I had to say this. The men that I was trying to be in relationship with, because I was going to get married, I was engaged, and Alana and her dad, we even tried to work it out, but we didn't at that time because my grandmother had just died. I needed healing from that. And I knew enough then that I needed a minute, because he wasn't going to get my best self. But even at 33, when it happened to me, anybody that got me before 33, they were not getting the authentic, true Ramona. Because it was my life, the way God showed it to me, was like a highway with piled up collisions that just had not been dealt with. And there were places and breakages in me that needed to be healed and needed to be addressed. And when we suppress memories and all of that, whether we know it or not, we are walking like a walking dead, and we are in survival mode. So I was living in fight or flight mode, and that was it. And that wasn't good, and that wasn't healthy. So then I stumbled by getting a job teaching parent education into training. And that's how I started learning about trauma. And that's how I started learning about parenting. And then I had to unlearn so much. And I had to learn about brain development and learn about my hippocampus memory and my frontal lobe. Did it develop enough? Because without trauma, you should be finished developing at 23, 25. But my God, I had so much trauma, but I didn't know. And so I understood that my problem solving skills and things like that, they weren't good because they hadn't been developed. I hadn't tested them. I hadn't tried them. And at that point, you do me, that's it, it's over. I didn't have any conflict resolution skills or anything. So people are like, well, why are you so skinny? I'll take that. They'd be like, well, why are you still single? And they'd be like, you are such a catch, you are such a this. And I was like, it's not them, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
It's me.
Yep.
Now, some of it later on was them. However, I needed to practice because I hadn't even practiced learning. It's like their muscle development. It wasn't developed or anything, because trials and tribulations are going to come in relationships. Relationships are going to be tested.
Right.
Fire or whatever way. But if you run at the first sight of trouble, well, girl, you ain't got nothing up under your belt to hold you.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and so what you just said, you know, how you just explained it, I'm hoping everybody can hear this, because this is why I get so upset when I hear or read something on social media about how Black women are and how they show up in relationships. And I'm like, do you understand how individual our trauma is, how exclusive our trauma is, and why we are the way we are? Like, I don't think they understand how traumatized we have been as a complete culture, and why we can't be like old Susie over here who had everything handed to her and she hasn't experienced so much, so she can come soft. She's never had to be in survival mode. She's never been, you know, dragged down the block to her auntie house because her mama on drugs, or her mama don't want her, or she don't know her dad. Like, they haven't experienced this by and large as an entire culture. So no, I don't even like you. So get away from me. And yeah, I'm going to be hard. And I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know how to navigate it. And you ain't helping me because you the one put me through half this shit anyway. Dad, uncle, cousin. Like, I don't know how to have relationships with men, Black men, because y'all ain't never showed me how to.
Right.
And that's why I get so upset when they try to compare us to other cultures as if we've been dealt the same hand. But then on the other hand, Black men want us to treat them a certain way when they don't act like other cultures either.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, y'all been traumatized too, but we still will take and KK and Boo Boo in our house, and we'll build them all the way up, and then y'all throw us out the window like we ain't shit. I mean, nothing. When y'all get elevated and y'all raise up. So can we please stop the comparison? Because our traumas ain't the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad you broke that down like that so they can hear. Like, this is why we navigate a relationship like this, because this is what happened. That's why. Sorry, I'm off my soapbox.
It's okay. It's okay.
We got comments? Let me see. BJ says, spot on. Dealing with trauma becomes muscle memory. Without help or work, we resort to what allows us to survive. Absolutely. Absolutely. What did Kimberly Johnson say? Susie's voice was heard. Keisha's what? Come on here, Kimberly. Boy, if I had a collection plate, I would give you some offering right now. They'll never hear us until we get loud, and now we ignorant. We angry.
And we're angry, and yeah.
Yeah, I'm angry. I'm mad as hell. Now you finally hear me.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was good. That was good. All right, what's my next question for you? Okay. In what ways... No. I don't know if you even touched on this, but I think you might have. The symptoms that you had to navigate through in those relationships, whether it was physical, emotional, spiritual, mental, like over time, did you start to connect the dots from the trauma and why you were acting like that in the relationships?
Wow. Yeah, because I believe not feeling worthy would cause you to give yourself away because you feel like that's all you have to offer, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing that I had to deal with was that I didn't even know how I saw my body after being raped. Oh. I saw my body as a crime scene.
Jesus. Lord, have mercy.
I don't see it as that anymore. But that's what I walked around with, because you don't get to shed the thing where this took place at. Mm. It's different if they robbed your house. You can move out of that house.
Yeah.
I can't move out of my body. So I had to make peace with that. Mm-hmm. And I really had to ask God to help me reconcile that, so that I didn't view myself, because when I saw myself in my mind, I saw that black and yellow tape that they put at the scene of the crime.
Lord, I know.
So much more than that. I am so much more than that.
Yes, you are.
So now those markers, I don't allow them to be there anymore. And I allow God to come in and heal those places. But for anybody that's still dealing with that, I want to encourage you to go to God for that healing. Because when he sees you, that is not what he sees.
Fearfully and wonderfully made.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof, Lord.
And it changes the decisions you make. It changes who you allow yourself to entertain. It changes what you allow. And one thing I told myself in my 40s, I said, listen. And I say my 40s because I don't want anybody to think that this was an overnight journey. And I'm in my 50s now. I told somebody, I said, I'm leaving you. I might not leave you today, I might not leave you tomorrow, but I'm leaving you. And when I leave, I'm not coming back. And they didn't believe me because I had entertained the foolishness for so long.
Yep.
But girl, when I left.
Come on now.
Baby honey.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I say, girl, I don't even know what you was thinking.
Woo! Come listen.
When I look back at the choices that I made and the people that I allowed access into my sacred space, and these are, I'm talking about men and women and relationships, that I wouldn't have made certain decisions had I not been broken. That I wouldn't have tolerated certain stuff had I not been broken. Despite where you come from, you know, flowers still grow in broken concrete. like crayons that are broken still colored.
Absolutely.
So you don't get to define me by where I came from or who my mama is or who my daddy is, you know. People poured good stuff into me. And the Bible says before the foundation of the world, I was predestined to be here. So that means that God thought good thoughts towards me. That's what Jeremiah 29:11 say, right?
Yes,
he thought good thoughts towards me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to embrace that in this place. And if you don't have good thoughts towards me in this place, it's okay. I'm going to see you later, though.
You got to
go. It's okay. Yeah, you got to go.
You got to go.
It's not welcome.
And I'm glad you said that, too, though, because I want young girls to hear that. I want them to know that they don't have to sell themselves short. You are more than just your body. You don't have to, just because somebody likes you in that way, in the physical way, don't mean they actually like you. They don't value you. You got to see yourself as more than just being able to lay down in the bed with somebody, because that trauma will overtake you. And you just want to feel comforted some kind of way. And you want to do whatever it is with whoever show you any attention.
Yes, yes. And then you have to realize the depth of what you really need. Like, I really needed to be held emotionally.
Yeah.
Some of these people didn't have the capacity to hold me the way I needed to be held. Uh-uh. I'm not mad at you, but let's not play that game anymore.
Right. And once that light bulb go off, like you said, you're repulsed by what you accepted. You're repulsed by the people that you even allowed access to you.
Mm-hmm.
And your whole perspective on yourself and life and what you entertain just changes. And it's a suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
It's an atmosphere change. It just shifts. And then things that come into your life start to come in ways that you won't even imagine.
Right. Right. So I remember this one time I kept singing this song, and it was Down Here, Lord, Waiting on You. And I would just say, Down Here, Lord, Waiting on You. Down Here, Waiting on You. And then one day I heard him sing back to me, Up Here, Child, Waiting on You. Up Here, Child, Waiting on You. Up Here, Child, Waiting on You. He was waiting on me. I thought I was waiting on him. It was the exact opposite.
Yep.
He was waiting for me to catch up to who I really was. And I'm going to just drop that right
Come
there.
Come on, man. Listen. That was confirmation right there. And I got to say it because my publicist was talking to me today and she was pouring into me today. And she was like, and I said, I receive it. She said, you don't have to receive it. It's already in you. I said, well, you better preach the word then. Okay, hold on now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Watch out. Oh yeah. You gotta once we start thinking like he thinking like you're thinking, wait, no, we
got
something so much better.
Yeah.
So much
so
better.
So you're gonna be a chicken or an eagle.
Ramona, you just said that is crazy. My first duty station. This lady came in, never saw her before in my life. I worked at the gym. She came into the gym and she just said to me, she said, you need to stop hanging with chickens. You an eagle. I'm like, what is that? I was 19 years old. I had no clue what that lady was talking about. No clue. I'm like, lady, this lady crazy.
Mm-mm.
Mm.
Mm-mm. Because when you're an eagle and you allow your wings to fully span and ascend up and you see above the situation and you're looking down on it, you make different decisions looking down on it instead of being in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that goes with the scripture that says we're in this world, but we're not of this world.
Yeah.
And so if we're heavenly citizens and we're kingdom citizens. God wants us to come up in the spirit so that we can see it the way he sees it and then pray accordingly for his will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's the difference between the chicken and the eagle. You can see what you see because you hear, but come up so I can show you the other view of it so you know how to pray effectively.
Come on now. What BJ said? BJ said, the Bible says if your hand makes you stumble, cut it off. I had to cut off family. I stopped saying at the end of the day, that's family. I had to truly realize and understand that my mental and emotional health had to take precedence. Now, that's a word.
Yeah.
That is a word. Because if you disturbing my peace,
And it's priceless.
You have got to go. I'm not entertaining you. I'm not explaining away what you're doing to me. None of that. I'm not defending you. You got to go. You just got to go. Life too short for that. Can you put up Tiffany? Tiffany Jackson said, above is from God's perspective. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. His thoughts, they're just higher. They're just higher. So, Ramona, what was the turning point or the wake-up call that started your healing journey?
It really was that job when I was 33. Mm-hmm. And then it was a couple. Y'all gonna die laughing. It was a Mary J. Blige concert.
Okay, Mary, you know Mary be going through it, honey.
My friend took me to the concert when I was 35. That was my 35th birthday gift. Mm-hmm. And then it was the song Jennifer Hudson sang in Dreamgirls, "I Am Changing." Mm. And when she said that line, trying every way I can see, but I need a hand and I need a friend. Oof. And when she talked about the darkness and how she thought she was blind, that's how I felt. But I knew I wasn't blind. Mm-hmm. But then, and they were moments, when Fantasia won American Idol. Mm-hmm. Remember that, Lana? We was crying. When she said, finally, I believe, right?
Take your time.
It's enough for everybody else around you to believe, but if you don't believe,
listen,
nothing anybody can do. They can't make you. Nope. And so that's what caused me. It was a series of moments that started catapulting me into moving towards, I can have something better. Mm. And not only can I have it, I deserve it. And I'm worthy of it. Oh, no matter what mistakes I've made, no matter what I've done, I'm not a scarlet letter. I'm not a leper. Mm. I'm a child of God. I'm his beloved. We have to keep saying these words over. Yes. I'm the head and I'm not the tail. I'm above and I'm not beneath. And when he swore by any other name, he said, surely I will bless you. He swore that he would bless me. And I was so messed up in my head. I believe he would bless my child, but not bless me. Oh, that's man. What that thing had done to me, that I wasn't worthy of. And that he did not love me anymore. Oh. His love never ran out on me. But that was the thing that I walked away with, too. So when, oh, my God, the Fighting Temptations movie came out, and they sung that song, like, I'm not good enough. Seems like I'm always, what's the words to that song? Because it was the song that Eddie Levert and Beyonce and them sung at the end of the thing. And I was just like, who told you this narrative? And why do you continue to rehearse it when you, Ramona, know that Bible front and backwards? And he said that as far as the east is from the west, that's where he put your sins. Mm. And when he says that his love covers a multitude of sins.
Yep.
And that he died for your sins. And there's so many scriptures in here that speak to that, but I'm living in this place of condemnation that I'm not supposed to be living in. And I'm living beneath my privileges. And you're treating yourself and your body like you're beneath, and you're not. Mm. So you have to change your inner conversations.
Yes.
You have to change what you say to yourself. You have to change who you're around. You have to change what you're watching. You have to change your diet, even the way that I eat now. I'm not, 10, 12 yet, but I know good and well when I'm doing something I ain't got no business doing. Like, I know one day I was in here drinking a soda. Oh, it's so good with strawberry. And I heard my head saying, you're drinking sugar, you're drinking sugar, you're drinking sugar. But at least I know now you drinking sugar.
Yeah.
And whatever you get from this is on you because you intentionally drunk this sugar.
Yeah.
That's the difference now.
Before food
was my comfort, that was my friend. Yeah. And I even told myself, well, food has never let me down. Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, we wanted something. We wanted alcohol. We wanted drugs. We wanted sex. And sex don't even like some bad sex, but. And yeah. Because it's for a fleeting moment. And that's not what God wants us to do. He wants to heal us in every place that is broken. And I'm just on this journey. And I'm just crazy enough to believe him that he's going through the finished work. Because that's what his word said.
Yep. Standing on his promises.
Yeah. So that's never failed. That's what catapulted me. That's how Still Waters began. That's how I started writing the books. The healing was coming as I was going. Even this year, writing the book When Grandma Dies, that book has been sitting in me for 25 years. I couldn't write it. It was so, it was in my chest, right? And I met this lady and she said to me, we don't have a lot of books out here on grief for African-American children. And the Holy Ghost was like, did you hear what she said? And I was like, and I'm sitting there and I'm writing a book and I'm crying and I'm bawling. Like, my grandma had died yesterday, but my God, the freedom that I got since I wrote that book, I don't bawl anymore when I speak about her. I can speak more with joy. I can speak more with appreciation, with an affinity for what that she blessed my life with. And I was able to work for the first time with children and talk about grief and not just fall out the floor with the children. So I know him, right? To be a healer, because I see his hand in my life as I keep going.
Yes, absolutely. That's so good. Yeah, that's good. We needed that. We needed you. We needed that story, because my son had a death with his aunt, and I didn't know. I had no clue how to talk to a kid about that. Like,
and it's
crazy because this white lady gave me a book, and I'm like, I don't know if he's gonna really get this. And he was trying to read it. He was like, I don't want to read this. So it's definitely needed. It's needed. Yeah. Oh man, this is good. Folks are going to need this, Ramona. So what healing practices or tools have been the most transformative for you? Because you're providing tools now for people who are maybe going through trauma. But what tools did you use to get you through your trauma? Or did you have any?
Therapy.
Thank you for saying that.
And I had a therapist, right? She was not scared of me in my big eyes. Like, when she called me on stuff, she said to you, like, I ain't moving. I was like, well, who she think she talking to? And so, at the time, the pastor that we had, he's went on to glory, but he was like, y'all can't be out here bleeding on the people. Y'all got to go to therapy. He said, because I got to make sure y'all all right while y'all going out here helping the people. So we had to go see a black psychologist, Dr. Claire, and she still works with us in the community on trauma and stuff. I hope she'll ever write about me, because I was... But I remember her saying to me, she said, so how long have you been this big? I was like, never. Let me talk about that.
Wow.
And I look back at her like, did you? And she looked back at me like, and I did. And so I was like, well, you paying, right? So you might as well come on through.
Right.
And that's how she diagnosed me. She said, you're still grieving your grandmother. And I was like, we don't touch that either. Like, yeah. And the next thing I know, I was crying in her office like a baby. And she said, you probably needed that. She said, you didn't have time to grieve even that, because you became a mother and you went into survival mode to get ready for a baby.
Yep.
And I was like, yeah, we need a pair of socks. Like, we had to hurry up.
Yeah.
And Yeah. And she said, you've been in that thing for so long. And yeah, we got to snatch you out because at that time, I think Alana was like 15, Greg going 16. So she's like, she's preparing to leave. And what are you going to do when she leaves? Because you've been so wrapped up in her. Who are you? She was like, who are you?
Oh.
I was like,
She's calling you out.
Yeah. So that writing, parking by the water, just sitting here. But being intentional when I wake up in the morning, everybody, that 5 a.m. thing, don't call me. That's my time.
Yep.
Like, I gotta, God, what we doing? What's going on? I got questions, or my new line is, I'm concerned about I'm not necessarily worried, but I'm concerned. I have some concerns. But just trying to be more honest and open with him and just letting him in those dark, dark places, because there's still some more places. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that started to unearth them even more was becoming a caregiver. Because of my tumultuous relationship with my mother and having to care for her, because it was hard to care for somebody. And this is how I'll say it. They didn't put anything in the bank, but there's an expectation of a withdrawal. And how do I do this, God?
Yeah.
Ooh, and God, I want to still honor you. Like he got me good.
Yeah.
Check
that faith. Is it really there?
And I've had to have some really honest conversations with him, and just tell him how I really feel. Yeah, and it ain't all been pretty, but he's flushing me. He's definitely giving me more empathy and compassion, and I'm able to see some things from a different perspective that I wasn't able to see before. And some things we not giving passes on, we addressing.
I know that's why.
You know, there are some areas where I believe he's given us time to get do-overs or to have conversations about. This is my, because sometimes you don't know the intent or the intention. And one thing I know about us as Black families, mothers or fathers, we want to keep our children safe. And sometimes our intensity about their safety can be misconstrued. But we have a clearer view sometimes of what the world is really like versus what they know it to be, and we don't want anything to happen. So remember when you're growing up, I'm a beat you so the police won't.
How traumatizing is that?
But you understood it. Unfortunately, we've seen it, right?
Yeah.
In our time that we never expected to see.
Right.
Why they meant what they said. Mm-hmm. And to be on your best manners and yes, ma'am, no, sir. And even after you do all that, you still might get beaten in the street. You still might get killed or that.
Right.
But you understand they just want you to come back home.
Yeah.
So we got to learn better ways to articulate that, that, so that we're not scarring them at the same time.
Because these kids have questions.
Yeah.
If I said that to my son, I don't have time for this today, Kenny. Like, never mind. But yeah, I agree that the caregiver thing for you, and I noticed because I talked to you, that to me felt like it was one of the biggest tests that you had to go through in your spiritual growth, because you had been through so much already, and you had got to like a point where you were kind of smooth sailing a little bit, and now it's like, whoa, God, really? This is what we're gonna do?
Yeah.
Ooh, you showing out.
It was crazy, because I remember the day we were sitting in the doctor's and they gave us the diagnosis, and I said, haven't quite figured out how to live with you, but I don't even know how to figure out how to live without you now. Mm. I said, now what do we do
wow. with this,
God? But I've learned some stuff, and I've learned him, and the greatest lesson he has taught me and is teaching me, because I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. He said, you partner with me.
Ooh.
I was like, oh, all right. I don't need you, but you partner with me.
Mm. Well, he spoke. He said what he said.
Yeah.
Okay. So I got two more questions for you. And typically I would ask the same questions I always ask, but I changed them a little bit for you because I think these questions are important for you specifically. So what advice would you give to someone struggling with like guilt or shame as they begin to like speak up or heal?
Nobody gets to drag you through your healing.
Mm.
Nobody. Now, you're not responsible for what happened to you, but you are responsible for your healing.
Mm.
But do not allow anyone to drag you. It's not that bad. It could be worse.
Ooh.
Or you all right? No, I'm not. Because what I did not like was people use my gifts but didn't be concerned about my healing.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
And I had to go to God about that. So they were okay with me broken. They were okay with the broken version of me, and it was a better version that I could have been.
Mm.
Now I'm becoming it, but I'm just saying that wasn't cool. And now that I'm not broken the same way, you don't like that I speak up or that I articulate or I say what I don't like or what I don't want to do. Or yeah, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
But then I had to accept the fact that you was broken too. You just didn't say it. Or you didn't know it. Or you were made to feel that you were something that you're not. And eventually, if you live long enough, you're going to have to deal with that about you also. But uh-oh. Over here on Ramona's playground, that's what I would tell. So don't allow anyone to drag you through your healing. Let God do it. And you, I don't care how many times you cry.
Oof.
Keep crying till you don't cry no more.
Yep.
Because if it hurt, it hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. Let me see. Which one did I want to ask you? If you could speak to your younger self or someone who feels stuck in survival mode, what would you say?
Girl, it's going to be all right. And it's going to get good. Yeah. Yeah, because in spite of where I am, even right now, these are really the best days of my life. Like, girl, will you get a hold of you?
Mm.
Yeah. Yes, it's all right. It's all right. Nothing else matters. I don't care how many times it falls apart. Because you know you and you know what God has put in the inside of you, you can build it back up again or you could do something different. Don't be afraid to reinvent yourself and do it fearlessly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you're standing in your knees is knocking and you got tears and you're sweating in the back in the kitchen. Just go and just do it because I'm telling you, man, the doors I've been able to walk into, the things I've experienced and seen, they don't compare to none of that. And had I stayed afraid and stayed stuck, I would have missed.
Yeah.
And God has so much for us.
Oh my gosh. So much. Exceedingly.
And forgive people. Forgive people. Forgive them. Forgive them. Because Jesus said it best. He said, they know not what they do.
Yeah, and they don't even matter for real.
Yeah, no.
Mm-mm. It was just a lesson, and mm-hmm. I keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That was good. Ramona, you have always been a gem, a gift. Whoever didn't appreciate it, I feel sorry for them, because I've always known you've always been a safe space for me, and I always appreciate you. I can call you anytime, literally. You show up. Not only just you, I mean, anytime I need your support, you show up no matter what, whether it's getting on a plane, whether it's buying something, whether it's sharing something, whatever it is, from the day I've met you, you've always shown up, and I appreciate you from the bottom of my heart. They don't make it like you no more, and I'm glad they don't, because I got you. I appreciate you being on the show. And I'm sure the people in the comments appreciated this. Your gems that you dropped, you're just a gift. And we love you to pieces. And this is the part where you get to share, tell them how to follow you. If you got anything coming up, if you want to promote it, your books, anything, let the folks know how to reach Ramona Gain.
Okay. So my website is visionaryramonamgaines.com. And you can go there for anything, all things Ramona. And if you want to talk about writing a book, we help people write books and birth their books. You want someone to teach parenting classes, I teach parenting classes. And I also am a trained trauma expert specialist. And also, I do youth groups and things of that nature, public speaking, whatever you need. I'm here, and I'm open and available, and I just want to help people give birth. They call me the pusher because they say, once you tell me you want to do something, I don't let you go. Well, don't tell me you want to do it, because I just believe that if you're supposed to give birth to it, and let's go, and you'll figure out the rest later. So that's that part. And, yeah, that's pretty much who I am. Or you can find me on Facebook or inbox me, but it was absolutely my pleasure. I am so proud of you.
Thank you.
I'm going to say this publicly. I am so proud of you. And I remember when we fried chicken at Burger King and got in the car to follow you to North Carolina to your track meet. I knew then that God had amazing things for you. And I wanted to be to you what no one was ever to me. And I want you to do that for the next person. I saw my grandmother, who was such an encourager. She was an amazing woman. It was a family member that couldn't read, and she went back to school with him, so he wouldn't be afraid to go to school to learn how to read. If she saw somebody in a Jag and we was in a Buick, she would celebrate them. We didn't know those people, but she was just that kind of person. And I just feel like we've lost that thing in our community where we don't celebrate and support each other enough. And it doesn't cost you anything to encourage and celebrate and support one another. So I want us to try to do more of that and just watch what happens when we do that. Because I have some amazing, amazing, good cheerleaders. Now, my circle has shrunken, but the ones that are there, they are solid. They celebrate. They support me, and they love me. I don't have to perform. The difference now. I don't have to perform. I can just show up as me, and it's all good. So I just love that about this journey as well. But
and speaking of your grandma encouraging, I'll never forget when she asked me what I wanted to do. She asked me what I wanted to do, and I said, I want to run. She said, well, run on.
Yes, yes, yes. That was her.
Yep.
That was her.
That absolutely. Was her. But yeah, y'all make sure y'all go to Ramona's website, visionaryramonamgaines.com, and hit her up. She got any kind of book you need. Your kids need a book. You need a book. If you need a bonnet, if you need some edge control, look, she got it. You hear me? She got it all. If you need to learn something, she is the one to teach you. Don't miss out. I promise you, she is one of a kind. She's one in a million, one in a lifetime. So don't miss out on that. And y'all know who I am. I'm Dee Dee Legette, a.k.a. The Core Queen. Welcome to The Core Queen Chat. We'll be back next week with another guest. I'm excited about what God has in store for me. I got so many things coming up, especially Friday. I have a huge thing coming up. I will be at the 116th NAACP convention. I am a panelist for the Protecting Your Peace and Prioritizing Self-Care panel. And I can't wait to talk on this panel on Friday. So if you're in Charlotte, if you're around, I'm on there from 3:30 to 4:15. You can get your tickets from the website. Come out, check me out, you know, take some pictures or whatever. But I really want people to hear what I have to say. I'm the only non-doctorate holding panelist. So God is just opening doors for me that nobody ever thought I'd be able to walk in. So I appreciate the nod on that. And then also, Ramona knows we do this every year in my hometown. My nonprofit, Evelyn Joy Community Outreach, will be holding our third annual Back to School Bash. It is a huge event in my hometown of Bristol, Pennsylvania. So we need donations. If you can donate money, if you can donate school supplies, we have an Amazon wish list. If you need the link, let me know. I'll send it to you. Or you can just send us a Cash App and let us know if you can come out to volunteer. If you want to have a vendor slot, if you got a food truck, anything you want to do to come out and support the kids. They are, they love it. We have horses out there for them to ride the horses. We have a bouncy house. Fred, can you change the thing to the Evelyn's Joy, the one up top, so they can see? It's another one up there too, both of them. Yeah, the kids are out there. They got, we have the drill team coming back. The Dancing Dolls of Bristol will be out there again. Hopefully my girl, we'll come out there with the minion suit on again. We'll see. We get
She'll be there. She'll be there.
We got the games for the kids. They played tug of war, kickball. The kids had a blast out there, I'm telling you. And most of the time, we'll have some of the local business owners come out, and they'll give out like gift cards for the girls to get their hair done, boys to get their hair cut. So hopefully we'll have some more sponsors in that way too. But y'all come out. We're going to have a good time. We'll have DJ Tommy on the 1-2 spinning the wheels for us. So, and we give out a free meal as well. So we'll have Bunky out there cooking on the grill for us again, so the kids can get a free meal. We got 5 flavors. Water ice going to be out there too. So listen, it's an event, and I love giving back to the kids in my community because I want them to know that it doesn't end there. You can get out of that. It's more to come. If you keep living, it gets better. It's not a hopeless place to be. I came from there. So if you keep striving for what you want to strive for, you can come out of it too. So I'm always going to go back and get back to my community. I'm always going to go back and love on the kids because they don't have a choice. They didn't ask to be born. So y'all come out. That is going to be on August 23rd from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Marie Lowe Park in Bristol, Pennsylvania. If you're from where I'm from, it's the Terrace Court. So come to the courts, y'all. But I'll be back next week with another episode of the Core Queen Chat. Y'all look me up on social media. I'm Dee Dee Leggett on all platforms, or the Core Queen for my fitness. If you need a fitness coach, let me know. I'm in the process of creating a fitness app so that more people can join my program and get more customized stuff from me. I can touch more people across the globe with my app. Stay tuned for that, y'all. But I appreciate y'all every week. Make sure you subscribe to my YouTube channel, like this episode, comment on this episode, and share the link with people so they know to join us every week. Turn on that notification bell so you get notified when we're live every Wednesday at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. I'll see y'all next week. Bye.
See you later.